Why do I conduct my show on this manner? Mundo!
Sweet mother of God, what is the holdup?
Eleanor!
Once again, something wonderful in my life has been turned into a giant crap fest.
Mundo!
Got a little bit more cock for you here.
Eleanor!
Bow tie boy got the big snaggeroonie.
Mundo!
Oh, six of my nipples are tingling.
Eleanor!
See why America loves him so much?
Mundo!
I'd like to smash you in the face with my shillelagh.
Eleanor!
I have no idea what's going on.
Mundo!
He was lying.
He said he never tells a lie.
He was lying when he said that.
Eleanor!
I want a cup.
Well, could you spell that?
C-U-P. I want to see you. Oh, my God.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Stomach batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
For God's sake, strap yourselves down.
Okay, all you crazy bastards out there with nothing better to do than listen to me rant like a crazed loon. Welcome to the Cup of Joe radio show. I am your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, the voice of the working man and the voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Our engineer, Sock Puppet Sam, is here.
Hey, Joe, what do you know?
And we have a lot of stuff to talk about. But before we do that, Sam, give us the URL for the site.
That's cupojoe.blogspot.com.
And the email address?
joevec@bellsouth.net.
All right. Thank you, Sam. Once again, I want to welcome all my fans listening in at the White Rose Society. My thanks to Ben Birch for hosting my archives. Also, my listeners at rantradio.com and radiopower.org and cadrenpictures.com. That's cadrnpictures.com. Now, if last week's show sounded a little slow to you, it was a little slow for me, actually, although it didn't turn out as badly as I thought. You know, you listen to the show, or when you do the show, sometimes it doesn't seem like it sounds as good as it turns out later. Like when I first did the George Lowe interview a couple of shows ago, I at first thought to myself, this didn't sound like a very good interview, but then I just sat down and listened to it, and it was a lot better than I thought it was. And I listened to the show, last show, and I thought, you know, it sounded a little better, but as I was doing it, it seemed a little tired. And actually, the reason why it was a little tired was because I was very tired. I finished that show up at something like 4 a.m. on Thursday morning. I do the show, for those of you who listen on Rant Radio, and I've tried to do it that way anyway, but I do the show Sunday and Thursday. Two shows a week is what I try to do. In fact, I had someone email me, my friend Steve, who emails me occasionally. He's starting his own audio blog, or, well, he calls it an audio blog. I call my show a radio show. It's all semantics. It doesn't really mean anything. At any rate, he said, you know, he had a list of things that he'd like to see me do, and he asked me, you know, what I intend to do. And I said, well, basically, right now I intend on doing two shows a week. I intend on working a little more closely with the union. I am now officially a member of the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 2127. And by the way, let me give the disclaimer that my views do not necessarily represent the views of the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, either Local 2127 or the national organization, nor do they represent the views of the AFL-CIO, of which the IBEW is an affiliate. My views are my own. At any rate, I intend on working with the union to help working people there as best I can, so long as I'm still working and not laid off or fired, and I'll get into that in a minute. And just generally engaging people as much as I can. I was at Home Depot today buying a little shelf to put some kitchen stuff on. And, you know, I was talking to the young lady there who ran the cash register to see how she was doing and see if she was treating. She was working two jobs, and she only worked at Home Depot part-time. So, and that's really all I can do at the time. I mean, I tried to get more involved in the Howard Dean campaign, and I did a little bit, but it was just too much work for me. When you're working a 40-hour week job that's a fairly physical kind of job, there's only so much you can do. And plus, when you're in Atlanta and you don't have a car, that means traveling is very, very time-consuming, and you're always on a schedule. And especially since MARTA, which is Atlanta's public transportation system, is not the best public transportation system in the country, even though it's one of the most expensive. And I went off on a rant on that a while ago. Anyway, another reason that the show was like it was because I was busy. And mostly I was busy, you know, with work. But also there were a lot of union things going on. And we had a union meeting last week because the company that I work for, Siemens, the contract was up. And basically we did okay. I mean, I wouldn't call what we did in the contract a great victory. We didn't get a huge raise or we didn't get any, you know, physical guarantees that they wouldn't shut the plant down completely. But we didn't lose a lot. The company was apparently, according to the union president, the local president, a lady named Robbie, very nice lady, and her superior, and I forget the gentleman's name who was there at the meeting with us. He was one of the regular IBEW guys. The union was attempting to take away our insurance, and that would have been a very, very bad thing indeed. Let me give an example of how good insurance can be if you've got it. They contract out with this eye place for eyeglass. I have, you know, the said thing. I got a brand new pair of eyeglasses for $20, and that was a good deal. In fact, I needed new glasses because the glasses I had for like 5 years or so and just hadn't been able to afford to replace it. If you have glasses, you know how expensive they can be if you don't have insurance. And I got this pair for $20, and I was very, very happy with it. It's titanium steel, which is very light. The reason why it's titanium steel is because my skin reacts very strongly to metal. The old glasses that I had did not have a special kind of steel. It was just regular metal. And it was all this green gunk that was going on around it. And I just tried to keep it clean as best I could. But the problem was my skin was reacting to it. And the lady there recognized that instantly. And I got the titanium steel frames. I also got a pair of safety glasses, which is basically regular glasses but had little clips on the side of it, because you really need safety glasses where I work, as well as the steel-toed shoes. But the thing about it is, while I wouldn't consider the new contract, which is a 3-year deal, a huge victory for us, it was not a tremendous defeat. We did not lose a lot. We did not have to give up anything. They were trying to make us do extra overtime, mandatory, and trying to take away things like insurance and other things. I don't want to get into too much detail, but we held our own, and the reason why we held our own is because in the last few days of the contract negotiations, and it really did go down to the wire, it came down to the day before the deadline for a strike, which was last Thursday midnight. And the reason why it didn't go to that is because in the last week or so, we signed up 50 new union members, and I think that's fantastic. I think that's absolutely fantastic, because only in unity can working people like us have any kind of strength. Because let's face it, you know, even though there is some skilled work in that plant, the fact of the matter is that we're all pretty replaceable. And if we didn't have a union, then things would be far worse than they already are. And like I said, I only hope that I don't get laid off in, next week or so, really, is a date for, what's today? It is the 8th, as I see it, and sometime next week is when the layoffs are due to be announced, the first group. The second group is in June 30th, so if I'm still working by June 30th, then I'll be okay. One of the reasons why I got the glasses was I wanted to take care of that before, if we would have gone on strike or if I get laid off. So at least I have a new pair of glasses out of it anyway. We didn't really come very close to going on strike. In fact, the vote was something like 350-13 in favor of taking the contract. Nobody really wanted to strike, whether it was the company or not, but the company gave way at the last minute because of all the union people that got signed up, all the new people. And, let me say this. When you hear me get angry on the show, it's not always real anger. I mean, I do get very angry about certain things, but sometimes I kind of push it a little bit because, you know, you want your show to be emotional and you want to get people fired up about things, and people should get fired up about things. But I'm not the kind of guy who stays angry all the time. However, I do have a nasty temper. And anyone who's been on the receiving end of it will tell you that, because I get very abusive, verbally abusive. My language gets extremely profane, and I just push myself on people, and I think it tends to scare people a little bit. And over the last couple of weeks or so, I've really started to lose my temper a lot more. And I'm not really sure what the cause of it is. I mean, I know that I've got a lot of reasons to be angry, but I've got a lot of reasons not to be angry. And I could really lose my job for yelling at somebody like that at work. And what happened the other day, we got a forklift driver, and it's not totally his fault what happened. I was upset about how he handled it, but again, it's an example of what I talk about, of how when you're at work, things that happen that don't necessarily have to happen. Now, for those of you who have never heard before, I work on a paint line, basically, and I don't want to go into too much detail, but basically I pull painted parts off of an overhanging conveyor belt and stack them either on pallets or in baskets. To take boxes, like circuit boxes, or pieces of what we call trim, which is the little bits and pieces that screwed on into the boxes. And some pieces are smaller than others. But between layers of that stuff, we need to put some cardboard. And the cardboard is basically of two sizes. One a fairly large size to fit on the pallet, and the other one is a slightly smaller. And it's really not that much of a difference. The only way you could really tell is if you line them up side by side, which fit inside these big steel baskets. And baskets themselves weigh about 130 pounds, and they have to be sturdy because they're holding as much as a ton, or in some cases 2 tons worth of metal parts once you get them filled up. And in some of the parts, some of the trim that we have, they require a lot of cardboard, and you have to have the right kind of cardboard, because if the cardboard is too big for the basket, you have to fight it down. And when the parts are coming down at one hook every 5 seconds, and in some cases you have two parts coming every 5 seconds, that fast, you don't have a lot of time to smash this cardboard down. And we haven't had new, clean cardboard for a long time. I can't remember. It's been over a month since we had new, clean cardboard. And it gets very annoying because when the old cardboard gets stacked up, a lot of it is just either too big or it's just messy and it requires time, and we don't always have time. And the way we have the schedule at work is that since we only have the two of us on the line that I'm at, my coworker Dave and myself, when one of us goes on break, there's one person there all alone. Dave's been there for 5 years, and he's younger than me, and he's faster than me, so he can handle stuff better than I can. I'm not quite so fast, and I've never been fast, and I tend to get a little flustered when things build up on me. But it really wasn't so bad. What had happened was I was you know, taking off some boxes, and then they had a gap, and they had some trim coming down. And I went to pull the trim off, and you know, they had enough of a gap, but I had to try to catch up. But I did catch up without any real problems. But then I was having a problem because I couldn't find enough cardboard to lay in between the levels. And this trim was coming down very quickly. These parts were coming down very quickly. And by the time I got, you know, I found the one single piece of cardboard, the parts were way past me again. And so finally I just had to stop the line. And the forklift driver was sitting there watching me, and I'm like, I need more cardboard. And I was a little flustered, a little upset, but he was just, and he's, you know, and I grant that he is overworked because they only have the one forklift driver for back where we are, and he really does need some help doing it. And he's also not the fastest guy in the world, too. He's a relatively new driver and also not very good handling the forklift. He's almost knocked me down a couple of times, and he almost tipped the forklift machine over once. That's another story to begin with. But anyway, he was just saying, well, you know, don't blame the cardboard at you because you can't keep up. And I just lost it because, in my opinion, people should be helping each other out, especially since I'm the only one back there. If Dave had been back there with me, he would have been able to dig up some cardboard, you know, while I was working, or vice versa, so that we wouldn't have had to stop the line. Nobody likes to have the line stop because that brings the boss. And this guy, for some reason, is one of the people that just kind of tuned me out. And I run into people from time to time like that, and I'm sure you've run into people like time to time like that, where they just suddenly decide that your opinion or whatever you feel isn't worthwhile, and they're just going to ignore you. And, you know, I really, really hate that attitude, to be perfectly honest, because, you know, it's like, do I look like an idiot? Do I seem like an idiot? But I guess people think I am, so what am I supposed to do? So I kind of lost it at him. And I was really screaming. It wasn't an attempt to fight or anything like that. It was just, you fucking asshole, you know, why don't you do your fucking job? Because, you know, part of his job is part of his responsibility is to provide us with fresh cardboard when we run out. You know, we don't have time to go digging around looking for this stuff. But he's busy and he's overworked. But, you know, I got mad when he started blaming it on me. And I take that personally. And I got mad at a guy the other day, one of the third shift guys, and third shift works from 11 o'clock till like 8 in the morning, 7:30 in the morning. And, you know, the union meeting was coming up, and he was just dissing the union. Not everybody in the shop is a union guy. This is Georgia. We're a right-to-work state, which means you kind of have that situation where you have working people there who are not in the union, but they get all the benefits of being in the union. And a lot of them don't like the union leadership, which I can understand, because the last contract went very badly, not this one here, but 3 years ago. And a lot of people felt that they got the short end of the stick and that the union is not properly protecting the workers. But my opinion is, look, first of all, you know that the reason why you have the salary you have, and I make about $11.50 an hour when you include the extra money I get for working the mid shift. You wouldn't make that money if it wasn't for the union. If the union wasn't there, you'd be lucky to get $7-$8 an hour for doing what we do. And the union is actually shutting down part of the plant and moving it to Mexico. And they're paying people there $2.75 an hour. Now, one of the things about that is that the Mexico thing isn't working out as well as they like, partly because when you pay somebody $2.75 an hour to do work, that's about as much work as you're going to get out of them. You know, you get what you pay for. And the other thing is that they sent our supervisors down there to train them because, you know, union people were not going to go down there to help train these Mexican guys just so they can take their job away. That's just stupid. This is nothing against the poor Mexican people because I want them to have the same kind of rights and benefits that we have. You know, like Governor Dean said, if General Motors can shut down their shop and send it to Mexico, why is it that the UAW can't go down there and organize the Mexican workers? And that's what we really need, because I stand for all of my brothers, not just in America, but in Mexico and in Vietnam and elsewhere. But at any rate, this guy was just kind of dissing the union and going back and forth. And finally he just, you know, kind of pushed my button, just making fun of me. And I just went off on him. And again, I get profane when I get angry. So I was like, "Will you watch your language, man?" And I'm like, you know, you got a fucking problem with the way I talk. You got a fucking problem. And I'm like right up in his chest, you know. Because these issues are so important. And I say, so look, you may not like the union leadership, but you're not going to do a damn thing about it when you're not in the union. If you want to change the union leadership, you got to get in there. And I've talked to one of the guys who's the union rep. I said, listen, the problem that the people on the paint shift line, the paint line have, is that there's nobody who's representing them specifically. I mean, you have union reps that basically work in different areas, and they kind of sort of represent that. I mean, really, all the union reps represent everybody, but there's nobody who really works on the paint line that's a union rep to really speak for these people. If there is one for my area, no one's ever come up to me and said, hey, I am the union rep. And they really should be doing that. And I said, well, listen, I want to be the union rep for the people on the paint line. In fact, a bunch of the new people that signed up were people on the paint line, and I'm very proud of that. And we need to get more people in on that. And I want to be the one that represents them because I want to have a little more push as far as the union is concerned because I do want the leadership changed. But we're operating from we don't have as good a hand as they do in the Northeast, where in states where it's not a right-to-work state, where if you're working in the place, you have to be a part of the union. The union dues are not that expensive. It's only $15.50 a month, and a lot of people don't like to pay that salary. Well, what I don't like is that you have a group of people who aren't in the union who get the benefits for that, and they don't want to participate in the union. And to me, that's just wrong. And there are a couple of people in there, including some people I work with directly, that are not part of the union and don't want to be part of the union, and I'm going to take it upon myself to try to get them. Because I need, if I'm going to do anything inside the union, I'm going to need a core of people to help me out. I can't do it by myself. And the union president has been union president for a long time, and she's very good. A lot of people just seem to think it's all talk and no action. Well, you know, I think they did a very good job with the negotiations. The union guy said that he had done like 12 negotiations, and this was the only one where he didn't have to give anything up. And a lot of that was because a lot of people signed up at the last minute, and the shows of unity that we had, like wearing white shirts and things like that. So, and of course, me being, even though I'm 42 years old and I'm hardly a young kid anymore, I'm very enthusiastic about doing stuff. And one of the things I told one of the union reps, I said, listen, why don't we just, you know, have more social events? Why don't we have a barbecue or a picnic of some kind? Get more people together to socialize outside of the workplace. I mean, a union is more than just about people who work together. It's about an idea of community. And that's one of the things that I I loved about Governor Dean when he talked about it. He said the biggest thing we've lost in this country is our sense of community. And working people, especially here in the South, are more often than not pitted against each other. And little fights like I had with the forklift driver are what, you know, the bosses in charge love, because they know that when we're divided against each other, it's easier for them to pick us apart. So, and I want to stress to everybody, I know not everybody in the country belongs to a union or joins or lives in a part of the country or works in a job that even has union supervision, but they're all your fellow workers. You can sit there and play, you know, well, I work harder than this person or I don't like that person. You can play that all you want, but the truth of the matter is, when it comes right down to it, as an individual, you don't have a lot of power. And by ourselves, we can be defeated in detail. But together, we're a stronger force than the most powerful corporation. Because, as I've said constantly, no corporation can make a penny without us. And if we all work together, and I mean all working people in this country, if we all work together, then we have more power than we can imagine. Okay, I'm going to take a little break. Sam, play us out.
We'll be right back with more of the Papa Joe Radio Show.
And we're back on the Papa Joe Radio Show. I am your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, the voice of the working man and the voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Once again, that URL is cupojoe.blogspot.com, and the email address is joevec@bellsouth.net. That's cupofjoe.blogspot.com and joevec@bellsouth.net. Before I forget, let me remind everybody that today is Mother's Day. So if you have yet to call your mother or speak to her or thank her for all the work and sacrifice that she has done for you, please do so. Assuming she's still alive, my mother passed away about 20-something years ago. And I do miss her a great deal. Even though we didn't get along much in life, I do miss her, and I wish that we could talk to each other. And perhaps one time in the future, if there is such a thing as an afterlife, and if she's out there waiting for me and we wind up in the same place, and I hope that's a good place, that we'll wind up seeing each other again. But call your mother, sit up straight, eat your broccoli. Okay, where was I? You know, I haven't had a lot to say on the show, anyway, about the politics of the war in Iraq and stuff like that. I discuss it in passing on my blog because, quite frankly, other people do a much better job of it than I do. I mean, excuse me, the people on Air America and the people on, you know, like Al Franken and Janine Garofalo, and of course, the queen of the radio, Randy Rhodes, who I wish they would let get into a debate with Rush Limbaugh so she can just kick his ass royally. You know, they do a much better job than I do talking about that sort of thing. But what our government does affect us, as whether you're talking about as working people or just as regular citizens. And this whole torture mess that's going on. Frankly, I'm not surprised. I mean, you know these things sort of go on, but I'm not really surprised at the extent of it, because this is what the administration does. This is the attitude that the administration has. You know, it's basically we're better than everybody else, so therefore we're above the law, whether you're talking about international law or federal law or state law or local law. We're just above it all because we're better people. And it's a very elitist attitude, and it's very wrong, and it's going to come back to haunt them. But I think a lot of the problem that we're having is that, you know, we look at TV and we look at the people living luxurious lives and people who make a lot of money, a lot more than we'll ever make or see in our lives, and we look at our own lives and we think, man, I wish we could be like that, you know. And it really is kind of an illusion, the kind of wealth and the kind of power. It's an illusion and a trap. If you look at guys like Donald Trump or Bill Gates and stuff like that, well, maybe not Bill Gates so much because, you know, he started out fairly rich anyway, but he actually got rich by building something. You can say all you want about the business practices of Microsoft, and they're not exactly angels, if you know what I mean. But, you know, you can at least see that. But if you're talking about, you know, the Enrons and the Bushes of the world, you know, who basically get their money through connections and stuff like that and want to shove the rest down our throats. That we're kind of a lot of people who support the Bushes and the Kenleys and stuff like that are people who believe that somehow they can become part of that in crowd. It's just like all the people who read Ayn Rand's Atlas Shrugged secretly wish they could be part of the motor of the world. If you've never read Atlas Shrugged, I recommend you read it, even though it's a very badly written book. And although it's remarkable that the book got written because Ayn Rand, who wrote it. She basically grew up in communist Russia. So I think I have an understanding of what her feelings were and how she grew up. But if you look at her book, it basically says that there's a small group of people who are, as she puts it, the motor of the world, the ones who make everything work, and that we all live by their beneficence is the word. But we all live our lives and we have luxury because of them. They're the ones who set the pace. They're the motive of the world. They're the ones who make everything work. And the point of the novel is that these people suddenly just stop doing that and the whole world goes to hell, which is, you know, total bullshit. You know, you could do a reverse thing like that. What if all the people who did all the actual work just suddenly stopped? See how much money got made and how much capital gets moved around. You know, it would still be worse for some of the people on the bottom end of it. The people will have to work. But the truth of the matter is that it really does take a kind of a balance. I mean, you do need people in leadership positions who have an idea, who make things work. But you also have to have people to do the work. But anyway, a lot of people get tempted. If they read that book, they think, yeah, I'm one of the motor of the world. You know, I'm one of those people. And it's just not true. It just doesn't work that way. It's all part of society. You know, humans build communities. We build societies. That's how we survived. That's how we learned to overcome the animals and the other things. Because quite frankly, if you stuffed a naked human out there in the middle of the jungle without the ability to communicate with other humans and stuff like that, just one-on-one competing with the lions and the tigers and stuff like that, and the other animals of the jungle, let's face it, we would lose. We're not as fast. We're not as strong. You know, we don't have big teeth. We survived by using our intelligence, by building communities, and by learning to control our environment. We're not stronger than tigers, but we can invent bows and arrows and spears, slings, and later on guns and things like that to kill them. And then we learn to domesticate animals and to grow our own crops. And civilization, as we know it, started around 6,000 years ago in areas where they learned to produce more food than to support just the people growing the food. But the type of power and the type of money that the Bush people have is a trap. You know, some of us, are, you know, even if we were to get it, the Randians, the objectivists, which is the term for Rand's sophistry, I call it. It's not philosophy. It's rationalization as opposed to a philosophy or an ideal. But some of the people who think that they want to be the mo of the world really don't understand what they're talking about, because they're really, such people don't exist in the same way that Rand mentions. I mean, there are certainly great people in the world who are movers and shakers, and I'm not disputing that, but they're not the only thing that make things go. And that they can only do so much if they didn't have the cooperation of people working for them. And if you think that you're capable of being a part of that, quite frankly, I'm not sure you would want to be. You know, there's a price to pay for that kind of attitude. Because grabbing for money, and that's really all objectivism is a rationalization for greed. And there's an obsession with getting more wealth and getting more power, you know, and that's what it becomes. And it's an amplification. Power for the sake of power. And that's what the Bush people do. I mean, it's one thing to be politically astute and to manipulate people into doing something that you want. And that's sort of you kind of expect from political organization and political parties, because that's why they exist. Whether you exist for the purpose of making other, you know, one group of people rich or another group of people rich or one race over another race, that's understandable. But if you're grabbing power, you have to have an idea of what you want to do with that power. And the Bush people excel at getting power, but they have no idea what to do with it once they've got it, except to grab more of it. And they're not the only group in history that's done that. And this is what leads to problems. The Bible tells us, if you look at 1 Timothy 6:10, and I am not a Christian, but the Bible does have some good lessons for us. The Bible tells us that love of money is the root of all evil. That's what 1 Timothy 6:10 says. And history gives us a lot of examples of this. I mean, individuals, corporations, businesses, entire nations that are destroyed because of this greed for power, because they overreached. And when you're talking about nations doing it, you're talking about all the millions of lives that are lost and all the countless wars and the pointless battles that have gone on over the years. All manner of depravities committed when you're talking about religious persecution or just plain brutality for the sake of brutality. I mean, all this was at work 500 years before the Bible was written. It was at work in Athens. Ancient Athens, which sought an empire that went against every ideal they had ever stood for, and even though they had miraculously defeated the Persians, there was no ever more moral war in the world than the war that the Athenians fought against the Persians for their own survival, because that's what it was all about. They would either have been slaves of the Persian Empire or been free to create the greatest society that had been seen up until that time. And really, in some ways, it's still eclipsed what we do. I mean, we're technologically more superior, but we've had a background to work for. And we've seen it, you know, we saw it there, and they destroyed themselves because they got greedy and decided that they wanted to have an empire. We've seen it in countries and nations with less moral beginnings. Imperial Rome, and of course Imperial Rome started as a republic and then became an empire because the people there basically decided that they didn't want the responsibility of self-rule anymore. Although their republic may not have been as strong of a democracy as what ours was. You saw it in France of Napoleon, which tried to take over Russia and lost there. Germany's Third Reich, which of course is probably the least moral of these groups that I've mentioned, and Imperial Japan also was very immoral. You know, and we're seeing it today in Iraq. You know, this torture thing is just an example of the attitude of we're better than you and therefore we can do what we want. And for the second time in the last 50 or so years, we're going to see a situation where the most powerful military country in the world, in fact the most powerful military in human history, is going to be defeated by a country with practically no military at all, with just a fraction of our military might. And the people who were prosecuting this war, the people who were all gung-ho, I'm talking about the leadership, not necessarily the people who followed along with it, because, you know, they're not necessarily to blame for all of it, but they certainly should have been paying more attention. But the people who were prosecuting this war, the ones who lied about the threat posed by Iraq, the ones who disregarded any voice that warned them of the dangers of what they were doing, the ones who are looking to create an empire in defiance of every ideal this nation was founded on, they are fueled by greed. Greed for money, greed for power, and that is a very powerful emotion. It's like an aphrodisiac. And that greed has blinded them to the reality of what would happen, just as it's blinded those in ancient Athens, and just as it's blinded everyone with delusions of that kind of ultimate power. But there's another force behind that greed. And there's another emotion behind that, and that is fear. Fear that if you don't have absolute power over others, that others will have absolute power over you. This is why the Bush administration and all others like them constantly look for control. They're so focused on control and are so dismissive of the truth, of reality. They're afraid of losing power, so they have to continue to get more and more of it. But as I've said, it's both an illusion and a trap. In reaching for it, we destroy ourselves. Nietzsche said that if we gaze into the eye of the dragon, remember that the dragon gazes also into us. If you seek for that power, then it will destroy you and devour you eventually. Now, I read in another blog somewhere, and I think it's John Gornfeld's, but don't quote me on that, that if the Bush administration is allowed another 4 years in power, that the world will take it as a sign that we actually approve of everything that this country has done over the last 4 years. That the torture, you know, represents what we really are in America. Despite what Mr. Bush says, that what happened in Saddam's old prison cells, which are under new management, those old torture cells that are now controlled by us, that this really that despite what Mr. Bush says, this really does represent what America's all about. That's what the world thinks. I'm not saying it's true or not, but that's what the world thinks. And if Bush gets in and his people get in for another 4 years, that will just simply confirm that this nation has gone totally nuts and needs to be taken out. And we'll all be blamed for it, regardless of how strongly we've opposed the war in Iraq. Rightly or wrongly, this is our country. We the people, that's what it says loud and clear at the top of our Constitution. We all share responsibility for what our government does, and we will all suffer the consequences. And that's why it is up to us to stop it now. And we can begin just by getting the Bush administration out of office and truly changing the tone, not just in Washington, but of the country. We've spent the last, 20 years or so dividing each other and fighting with each other and focusing on the things that divide us. What was it that Lincoln said? Another quote from the Bible, a house divided against itself cannot stand. And this country cannot endure red state versus blue state. We are the United States of America, damn it. And we deserve to treat our people better. And I'm not just talking about, you know, the political stuff, but there's all sorts of people who just simply diss others simply because of the music they like or the clothes that they wear and stuff like that, that they're not good enough. And, you know, it's just such a dehumanizing process. And we've got to start focusing on the things that bring us together. We've got to stop letting the worst aspects of our nature rule over us. We've got to stop believing that fame, wealth, and power are the only things worth living for. And we've got to recognize that true greatness comes from inside. When I talk about people and working people and what they should determine is their success, and that's what I told the lady at Home Depot today. I said, do something you enjoy doing. Do something that you have fun doing, that it doesn't seem like it's so much work. Because there's no real law that says work has to be a miserable, degrading experience. There's no law that says that at all. And if you can make enough to support yourself and maybe save a little for retirement, however, and be doing the thing that you enjoy, you know what? You have reached about as perfect a life as you could possibly get. Because you get to be with your friends, you get to do something that you enjoy and make money at it so that you don't have to worry about where your next meal is coming from. I would love to be picked up as a regular radio show host, because then I can do this for a living, which I love, and not have to go and do 40 hours a week pulling stuff off a paint line. Not that I don't enjoy my job, but as I've said before, I love my work, but not my job, because of all the BS that you have to put up with. And lastly, what we have to recognize as a country is that as a nation, and as one of many nations, we're all in this together. As powerful as we are, we're just one nation among many. And we had a choice in this country in 2000. We could either have become the greatest nation of free nations, which is looking to create a global community based on the ideals of freedom and self-rule, or we could choose to become an empire, like we're trying now, the people for the project of a new project for a new American century, or PNAC for short. And we have a choice. We had a choice between being that and a tyrannical nation that's given in to the darker side of us. This is not, and again, I want to quote Governor Dean on this. This is not just a campaign to change presidents. It's a campaign to change America. Just putting John Kerry in there isn't going to do a damn thing. And we have to work to prevent what happened to Athens and Rome and France and Germany and Japan. We have to prevent that from happening to us. To paraphrase J.R.R. Tolkien from Return of the King, we are not large enough to bear the burden of empire. The freedom to rule over ourselves is all our need and due, our own lives to lead, not the lives of others to command. Deep down inside, in the core of our hearts, we know this. And the question is, will we listen? Okay, we're going to take another break. Sam, play us out.
The Papa Joe Radio Show will be right back.
Okay, we're back on the Cup of Joe Radio Show. I am your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, the voice of the working man and the voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Once again, that URL is cupofjoe.blogspot.com. That's cupofjoe.blogspot.com. And my email address is joevec@bellsouth.net. And again, I encourage people to write to me, talk to me, let me know what you think. Do I suck? Am I great? Do I rock? I think I rock myself. My wife thinks I rock. My wife thinks I rock and roll. She's sitting there reading a book. But write to me. Let me know what you think. Before I talk about what I want to talk about in this segment, I want to bring up something real quick. Some of my fans have written to me saying that they were disappointed that I dropped the music. I'm a little disappointed, too. Personally, I'd like to have more of the music, but let me just reiterate that the big reason is that it was just taking me too long to decide which songs to use every single show, and I didn't want to use the same music over and over again. Someone was particularly unhappy that I didn't play Disco Duck because they were shocked to find that I had it on there. I've got a lot of really goofy stuff, and this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to put together a special show, maybe not this weekend, but probably sometime during the week, that's going to be nothing but music and some comedy music and some of the stuff that I just have in my vast collection. I think I have about 3,000 songs, and just going to play some of it. We'll do a regular type of show. You know, I've always kind of liked to have been like a Dr. Demento type, to be playing all these weird, goofy songs and just be like the DJ for that. And I used to love listening to the Doctor when I was younger, when I was in the military. They actually had him on Armed Forces Radio on an expurgated show, because he does his show out of Culver City. And if you live in California, you get the whole thing, which is like a two-and-a-half-hour show. They produced those things on records. They used to have a big LP that had the show on it, and they would send it out to the different stations that syndicated it. Now I assume if they do it, they send it all on CD. You can put it all on CD now, either as an MP3 or as a straight audio track. But anyway, I know you're disappointed that I dropped the music from the show, except for these little clips here that I've been putting together, and I'm going to do a few more of these this week. But we're gonna satisfy that urge by putting together a special music show. It will be on the site again. That's cupofjoe.blogspot.com. And again, let me mention WhiteRoadSociety.org, RantRadio.com, and RadioPower.org, and CalderonPictures.com, who are carrying my show. And I'm going to get this into more and more stations as time goes by. And special note to Tim, who emailed me and says, you know, you shouldn't be so humble and all that. And I kind of agree. You're right. I try to be nice. I don't want to be like totally obnoxious radio show host like everybody else. But you know what? I rock. You know, I do this whole thing with such little equipment, and people pay attention to me and people listen to me. And, you know, I think what's key to me is the fact that when I say I'm the voice of the working man, I really am the voice of the working man. A lot of these guys, a lot of these rock jocks and the shock radio people, they're all college graduates, or you know, they've been hanging around the liberal or conservative elite for a long time. I'm not like that. You know, I am a regular guy in the real regular guy sense. And I don't mean that I go out there and I drink beer and I smoke big cigars and I treat women like property. I'm just, you know, a guy people hang out with. And, you know, that's really all I am. But I am fairly intelligent, and I'm going to talk about that in a minute. I do see things a little differently than most people, but I'm not, you know, your elbow-padded college professor type with a pipe, you know, and all that stuff like that. You know, that's why I think the Janine Garofalos and the Al Franken's, in the long run, that they're gonna go away. Al Franken's great. I love him. He's been one of my favorite comedian writers since way back in his days of you know, Saturday Night Live, from the early days. He was one of the earlier. He was there at the very beginning. And but doing a radio show is very, very different. And he's just got a very nice, soft-spoken, you know, the person on Air America who really rocks is Randy Rhoads. She is the only one that really kicks some serious ass. Janine is cool. I like Janine. I haven't really heard any of the other shows yet. But as far as the big people are concerned, it's Randy who's my hero. And when Air America finally gets its shit together, as far as who they should pick me. They should pick me because I do speak for the type of working class liberal that used to be dominant in this country. The union worker, the steel mill kind of guy, who most of whom went over to Reagan and to the Republican Party because the Liberal Party got too namby-pamby. I'm not a fucking namby-pamby. I am a motherfucking cock-sucking liberal kick-ass bastard. That's what I fucking do. I don't want to argue with conservatives. Someone asked me about, you know, putting... someone asked... Stop that. My wife is flashing me. Somebody asked me about doing phone calls. And I don't want to get on the phone with a winger because I'll just scream at him. I'm not interested in arguing an intelligent point with them. I want to take a fucking baseball bat to them. That's the way I feel about it. The time for talk is over. These fuckers have been talking and talking and talking for 30 fucking years. And the time for fucking talking is over. You have been wrong. You're wrong about the Iraq war. You've been wrong about the economy. You're wrong about so many fucking things. Shut up. Shut the fuck up. You're wrong. And if you think I'm fucking harsh about it, you just keep going the way you're going. Because when all hell breaks loose, you remember this. There's a lot more of us poor sons of bitches than there are of you. And you can fall back on all your, oh, it's old entertainment. You can think about that while someone's shoving a baseball bat up your ass. You think about that real fucking hard, Mr. Smartass. And you fucking high horse liberals, too. You college-educated social engineer types. You've been warned. And I'm warning you right now. You better wake up and smell the fucking coffee. There's millions of people like me out there. And we're pissed off that you're not fighting for us. And we don't have any love for you any more than we have love for these corporate cock-sucking bastards that are tearing this country apart and putting our soldiers in danger. Our soldiers, who are people like us, people like me, who go out there and risk their lives because they want to get some training to improve themselves, and they get caught in some fucking foxhole. And everybody makes heroes out of Pat Tillman. Yeah, Pat Tillman's a hero, and I got no problem with that, you know. But Pat Tillman was a football player, and we worship these people. But the people who are the real heroes are the ones who joined because they didn't have any choice and still stood up there and fought and do things and died and spill their blood and risk their lives for their country. Those are the real heroes. Yes, Tillman is a hero, and I'm a little upset at Ted Rall for making him sound like an idiot, because I admire the man for going out there and doing something when he could have just made a lot of money and not have to worry about it. But the real heroes are the working class slobs like you and me who go out there and do their sense of duty. Okay, enough of that. I wanted to talk about this article I saw in the New York Times, and actually I'm going to have less time to talk about it now. That's quite all right, though. It's called Europeans Like Bush Even Less Than Before. Well, now, we all know that Mr. Bush was not well-liked by Europeans anyway because of his kind of cowboy style. They call it, the Times always try to play it. They just call it his, straight-shooting, you know, type of deal, you know. But the truth of the matter is that he is even less liked now, and especially since this whole torture thing. It's really showing what people think is the true face of America. And if Mr. Bush gets in, like I said, that's what the world will think, that this is what we want. This is the America that we want. And everybody ought to just go along with it. Well, everybody's not going to go along with it. This is a quote from a British Tory. Now, a Tory is kind of like a Republican Party person in England. The Tories are the Conservatives. Excuse me, I had something in my mouth. I had some sausage earlier today. See, that's the type of, you know, red blood in American time I have. I had a nice big sausage for my dinner. At 1 o'clock in the fucking morning, I had an Italian sausage. Anyway, one Tory was quoted as saying, "George Bush scares the hell out of me." This was from an article in The Spectator, a British newspaper. Another said, "Bush is a man who might wail at the moon. I don't feel comfortable with him." And a third said that while he would vote for Bush in November if he could, I think Anglo-American relations would be better if Kerry won. And this was before the torture pictures came out. Now, across Europe, Andy Bushfeeling has contributed to a consensus that the coming American election is of singular importance for the United States, certainly, but also for the rest of the world. Anxieties about the direction America is going are accompanied more often than not by a passionate desire, cutting across national borders and party lines, to see Bush voted out of office in November. Now, I can see Karl Rove just salivating at this. Oh, you know, you vote for us and the vote for us or the Europeans win. But I got news for you, Mr. Rove. I have news for you, Mr. Bush, Mr. Cheney, Mr. Rumsfeld, and even Mr. Powell, who is a House Negro, as Harry Belafonte called you. And he's absolutely right. You're sitting there doing the work of your masters. You win that election this time, or you get in for another 4 years. Never mind winning the election, because as far as I'm concerned, you've already got the election won, because you're going to cheat so much, whether it's through lying and manipulating or directly tampering with the voting machines. I know you're going to get in for another 4 years. And when that happens, if you think the shit's going to hit the fan now, you wait till you see what happens if the Europeans start acting against us. Seriously. They could destroy us without firing a shot. Now, according to the article, while Europeans in general are more liberal than Americans, and among mainstream liberals in Europe, rejecting Mr. Bush is a matter of course, it's a strange thing that it's conservatives who are backing away. And of course, Mr. Bush isn't a real conservative. I have yet to meet a real conservative. But even they are backing away. In poll after poll, Europeans have shown themselves to be fervently anti-Bush. In Britain, which is America's staunchest ally in the Iraq War, a poll of 1,007 people taken last month for the Times of London by the British polling company Populous found support for Senator John Kerry over Bush by a margin of 56-22%. A poll of the people in nine nations conducted by the Pew Research Center for the People and Press showed that opinion of the president and by extension the United States had plummeted across Europe since Mr. Bush took office. In France, the poll gave Mr. Bush an 85% negative rating. In Britain, 57%. In Germany, 85%. And in Russia, 60%. Referring to the pre-war meeting last year of Mr. Bush, Mr. Blair of Britain, and Mr. Aznar of Spain, who was then the prime minister, and whose recent election loss was attributed to anti-war feelings by Spanish voters, some Europeans commented, "One down, two to go." In an editorial in March, the left-leaning British newspaper The Guardian put it more starkly. Senator Kerry carries the hopes not just of millions of Americans, but of millions of British well-wishers, not to mention those of nations throughout Europe and the world, and the newspaper wrote. Nothing in world politics would make more of a difference to the rest of us than the change in the White House. A lot of it has to do, and I want to get on this for a little while, I don't have that much more time to talk, but a lot of this has to do with Mr. Bush's fervent anti-intellectualism. He takes a lot of pride in being a simple person. Excuse me, or claiming to be a simple person. That there's something to be proud of. In not just lack of knowledge, but in sheer stupidity, which is what he has. There's nothing to be proud of about being stupid. You can be a tough guy and you can still be smart. And the things that we're doing are so unbelievably stupid. The way we went into Iraq, how we've been treating the Iraqis ever since we got there, it's just stupid. It doesn't make any sense. These are people, as the saying has gone, who only have a hammer as a tool, and who view every problem as a nail. And that is exactly how they operate. They don't like it when anybody uses terms like nuance, or things like that. But you know what? You got to learn to deal with people, and you got to learn to deal with them in ways other than bashing them on the head and making them do what you want. There's nothing to be proud of about being stupid. Now, while I am a regular guy, I do have a little trouble relating to some of my fellow workers, because I'll be honest, I am a lot smarter than your average laborer. And I have to temper my language when I'm speaking to them, when I'm speaking to them as a union member or stuff like that, because I know that they're not ready for the type of language that I use on a regular basis. So I try to speak very plainly. In fact, and I don't mean to imply that my wife is stupid, but when I write something or when I say something, I always try to phrase it so that she can understand it. Because I know that if she can understand it, I've gotten through to it. It's not that she's stupid. It's just that she hasn't had the time for a real education and stuff like that. I haven't had a real education myself, which is why, you know, I talk the way I do and I act the way I act, and why I'm distrustful and distrusted of and by the liberal elites. I don't feel very comfortable with them. And the Europeans tend to take a more intellectual point of view about things. And, you know, they've lived through all the kind of crap that we're doing now. They had to deal with it with Nazi Germany. They had to deal with it with the Prussians. They had to deal with it with the Napoleonic French, with the Russians, with the Ottoman Empire. They've had to deal with it for hundreds and hundreds of years. Mass stupidity brought upon by ideology and other things. They already have experience with it. If they seem a little tired and seem a little wary of it, it's because they understand. And it's a lesson that we have yet to learn. And if we're not careful, we're going to learn it the hard way. Now, Mr. Bush and his people, they're power brokers. They're very good at it. You don't have to be smart to be a power broker. It doesn't take that much, you know, intelligence to do that. Hitler and his people weren't necessarily very smart. Some of them were. Hitler certainly wasn't that intelligent, but he understood how to manipulate people. He was smart in that sense. And they were also fervently anti-intellectual, which is one of the reasons why they burned books. Not only, but one of the reasons why they burned books. Free thinkers and people who think above and beyond, hey, there's bad guy, let's hit him. And when you're appealing to people's fears and when you're appealing to people's negative emotions, it's easier. It's easier to put a bumper sticker on and say, you know, I hate the liberals, or I hate the black people, or I hate this and that. It's easy to do, to think of a short, insulting, you know, phrase like that. It doesn't matter that it doesn't solve anything. It makes people feel good. And it gives them a sense of superiority. And it's more difficult for us to try to phrase something. So we have to work a little harder. And that's why I think you guys need me on your side. Because I can speak these things. I can say these things in ways that people can understand them. But I think, frankly, one of my pet peeves and one of the reasons why I lose my temper sometimes with people is because that I have a very low tolerance for stupidity. I don't necessarily mean ignorance, but just outright stupidity. Or did I get that backwards? I just don't like it when people either don't know or intentionally don't know certain things or intentionally try to block out stuff because they're not capable of handling it. And I have as much rancor, hatred for people who are stupid, who only think in terms of bumper stickers, as they think about someone like myself. Because I understand that it's not that fucking simple. Life is a complicated thing. Humans are social animals. And we're all different and we all have to learn to live with each other. There is no fucking one-size-fits-all answer to every single question. And we need to learn that. And if we're not careful, we are going to learn that in more difficult ways than we ever imagined. We've been very prosperous for the last 200-something years. But if the rest of the world turns on us, we're going to find out what famine is like, and we're going to find out what poverty is like from a whole country's point of view. Because we cannot survive without trade from Europe, without trade from Asia. And the Europeans are getting together, and the Asians are getting together, and sooner or later they're going to realize that they don't need us. Well, I see by the clock on the wall that it's time to put this thing to bed. So this is Joe Vecchio and Sock Puppet Sam saying goodbye from the Cup of Joe radio show. See you next show.